Hey, this is Levi Kreis, and you are listening to the Positive Psychology of Pop Music.
Hello there. I am Wesley Ryan, and you are listening to the Positive Psychology of Pop Music, the podcast and radio show full of uplifting songs and the inspiring stories behind them. This week, I am over the moon to share my exclusive interview with Tony Award-winning singer, songwriter, actor, and all-around talented guy, Levi Kreis. Our conversation ran the gamut from the wisdom of Fiona Apple to the fluidity of gender and sexuality to the need for compassion and empathy in today's supercharged political world. And I even managed to sneak in some Days of Our Lives references. But before we get into any of that, it is my pleasure to introduce you to the man's mind-blowing musical talent. With two of my favorite tracks from his recent Broadway at the Keys album, available now, this is Levi Kreis with Not While I'm Around and Will You Still Love Me.
Will you still love me tomorrow? Oh, please tell me, will you still love me? Nothing's gonna harm you, not while I.
Hey, Levi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just watching you teach me about patience on YouTube right now.
Fantastic. Well, that video is mostly for myself, so I'm glad it's helping somebody else too.
You know, it isn't it always exactly like the content we provide half the time is like, oh, man, I need to remember this myself. So I'm gonna write it in a block and just, you know, I'm sure there's other people out there as crazy as I am who needs to hear this. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, especially on the 4th of July.
Cheers. Clear.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I actually fell in love with your voice when I heard you sing I Should Go on Days of Our Lives.
Shut up.
Seriously.
Wow. I had just, I guess I can back the story up a little further. I had just left my 8th major record label and decided that if I was going to do this, it was probably going to be on my own. And having been sort of in the entertainment closet and no label really knowing what to do with me when they found out that I was gay, I decided, well, maybe really zeroing in on my personal story and making a commitment to be authentically me, maybe I can find my own audience and do this myself. And so I decided that I would spend that $400 of catering money on a piano vocal record. I went into a studio in New York City, asked the guy behind the desk, can I just have 1 hour of playing these songs through, please? I've got like $400. And he was, you know, irritated, like most New Yorkers are, decided to let me in the studio. And so I recorded one of the ones. And as soon as I started putting the pieces together with the website and stuff, Eric Hyman reached out to me and recognized that I was sort of introducing myself to the LGBT world back in 2005 when, you know, I don't know the timeline, but I know that at least when I was on Atlantic Records with that 8 major record label, Rufus Wainwright had not changed the landscape quite yet for artists who were starting their careers as out. And so I was looking to people like Eric, and it was Eric's representation that took me on the road with him, and Eric's representation that got somehow a hold of a music supervisor there and made that moment happen.
Well, just in the oddness of life, in 2005, I think it was, I hadn't been out long at all, like a year. And then I went to a concert with my first boyfriend, and it was an Eric Hyman concert. And I talked to him after the show, and we were just talking about, you know, gay singer-songwriters and how tough it was. And I said, oh, you know, I just heard this great song called I Should Go on Days of Our Lives. He was like, no shit, that's Levi. I know it, Levi. So I just interviewed Eric last week for this show. So for that conversation, you know, like 12 years ago, it's just life is crazy. So in beautiful ways.
Great. Oh, well, we're sort of like extended family, all of us in a way then. that's really cool. I actually just talked to Eric last week myself. How weird.
Very weird.
First time I talked to him in a while.
Eric Hyman, the singer and the person, has played a pivotal role in multiple points in my life. And now I can add helping kickstart the career of Levi Kreis to the list of things I'm grateful to Eric for. And let me take this moment to also announce that Eric Hyman himself will be appearing on this very show in just a few weeks. So, to prepare for that, and to celebrate the support that he's given not just to Levi and myself, but to so many listeners over the years, I'd like to play my favorite Eric Hyman track for you right now. Here he is with the very inspiring, We Are the Same.
If we could talk, we both could listen, understand how we are different. Then maybe we could see that we are the same. But I know I gotta take a noble path, 'cause I don't want you to question the intentions that I have. I should go before my will gets any weaker and my eyes...
Welcome back to the Positive Psychology of Pop Music. You just heard my favorite track from Eric Hyman, We Are the Same, and I Should Go, my favorite track from Levi Christ, the artist we're spotlighting on this week's episode. I Should Go is not only one of my favorite love songs of all time, it holds a special place in my heart because of the circumstances in which I first heard it, which, to my delight, gives me another opportunity to talk about Days of Our Lives on this show. I realize I do that a lot, but it's really, really relevant this time, I promise.
Also weird, can I geek out on my Days of Our Lives knowledge for just a second?
Please, yes.
So when I was a kid, Carrie and Austin were like this power couple, and as soap operas go, you know, they've been through hell and they were never happy, and then they left the show. And then like 10 years later, they come back, and so it's this moment that I've been waiting for since I was 12 years old. And then they meet in an airport, and there's your song, and I'm just like, holy crap, that's the most beautiful, perfect love song. So then I researched you and found out, and I went, well, that's just a beautiful thing that it's this love song for the straight couple, but it's a love song that is relatable to anybody. So that's what I love about your music so much, is that it's universal. Love is love, and your music shows that.
Thank you. You know, I was just taught that as a kid. I mean, my mom had me at, I'm from East Tennessee, so we were able to go to Nashville anytime we needed to. And my mom started taking me to songwriting seminars around 12 years old. Oh God, there was like panels where you bring your tape, your demo, and you sit there and a panel of like Vince Gill and other people are sitting there listening to your music. And I remember that was the one thing that stuck with me, how important it is to make lyrics that that can relate to absolutely anybody. And I got a lot of pushback from the LGBT community, from a lot of our music critics back in the last 9 years, when we really had a thriving LGBT scene. And well, frankly, when we had LGBT media, which we don't really have even anymore, because I wouldn't be specific with my pronouns, you know, and mention he all the time, even though I have in a song or two. Yeah, I got a lot of irritated people now and then, just from not being specific enough, you know. But to your point, I think it's very important for artists to craft the human condition in a way that's palatable to every walk of life. Yeah. Period.
Yeah, I think there's so much importance in being out and proud, but, you know, I don't really like the term gay singer-songwriter, even though I just used it, because it's, you know, great music is great music, and people should sing songs about love, and, you know, I sing songs about girls, and I know guys, straight guys, that sing songs about guys. You know, it's music and love should be universal and not tied to gender or sexuality, so...
Well, and I love that. I don't like my music tied down, and I don't like my sexuality tied down.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of us who have a legitimate attraction to the opposite sex, who also are attracted to the same sex. I mean, the fluidity of sexuality is not something I've ever been able to nail down, at least not completely for me. I mean, though I have picked a side and a narrative, you know.
That fluidity of sexuality and identity, like I said, in music is some of my favorite songs. One of my all-time favorite songs is Bonnie Raitt's I Can't Make You Love Me, and I love your version of that song.
Oh, thank you.
It's a powerful love song, but for me, there's power in realizing that you can't make anybody love you, you know, regardless of what they want and how you try. What would you say to somebody who's struggling with being loved for who they are?
I can speak from my own experience, and I guess I can only put it in terms of my experience. So that's a good thing and maybe a more narrow thing. But I seem to have had the maybe it's Jan LaVanzant would say it's my pathology, where I have the loop of finding partners that don't seem to be able to love me back.
I can relate to that.
It was quite a routine for me. Yeah. I made a habit of it often. And for me, I think the hardest to, this is not fluffy and, you know, and sweet. But I had to realize that I can only attract that which I am a vibrational equivalent to. Mm-hmm. So everybody that was coming through my life, there's something about my vibration that's an answer to their crazy. And I had to go within and start at the beginning, which is loving myself and really exploring my own worthiness. And in finding that for myself, I was then noticing I was attracting people who actually saw me. They valued me. They considered me worthy of their love, worthy of their time, worthy of their thoughtfulness. And it's always an inside job, isn't it? It's like once you begin to invest inward, the outward begins to reflect back to you.
You know, Fiona Apple is one of my favorite people on the planet, and I read an interview with her, and she said, you know, I was looking back at my relationships, and they were all very different, but they all ended the same tragic way. And she said, I realized that there was only one common variable in all of them, and it was me. And so it was one of those moments where I went, you know, holy shit, my life is now explained, yeah. Fiona Apple, thank you. So, you know, I've been on that same journey where it's, I've got to respect myself and love myself and then put that out there that that's what I expect from other people. And, you know, my life has changed since then.
I never miss an opportunity to talk Days of Our Lives, just like I never miss an opportunity to play a Fiona Apple song. I honestly do credit many of the epiphanies I've had in life to Fiona's words and her music, and the Fiona track I'm about to play for you is the one that speaks most to our discussion of accepting responsibility for what we put into the world. But before we get to that track, delightfully and perfectly titled Werewolf, let's listen to Levi's aforementioned Bonnie Raitt cover, with words and meaning along a similar vein, just with a lot less werewolf references. Oh, and also, guess where I first heard this song? That's right, Days of Our Lives. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll stop with the Days references now. Probably. With the beautiful I Can't Make You Love Me, this is Levi Kreis.
I can't make you love me if you don't. I could liken you to a werewolf the way you left me for dead, but I admit that I provided a full moon. And I could liken you to a shark the way you bit off my...
One of the things I'm grateful for is now I have so many people who really are there for me, and I think it's important that people know that when they don't feel like it's possible that they're out there. So who are those people who've been there for you in your life in that way?
I've been blessed with two wonderful parents, and I have a partner of 8 years now that is taught me and teaching me, I'll make it present tense, that is teaching me by example how to do what most entertainers have no clue about, and that is being thoughtful to other people. Thinking about other people. It's literally like learning how to anticipate the needs of those that you love and forego your to-do list, forego your, you know, your all-consuming schedule, fill in the blank, whatever it is. Everything we wake up every day is paramount. Oh my God, I've got to do this before noon. You know, wonderful. That self-importance just slides to the wayside when you begin to notice, when you begin to have people around you, I think, that show you an alternative. I've grown up on the road since I was 12 years old. I came of age in Los Angeles. Most of my friends are entertainers. So now that I have moved away from the big city and that I'm living in the small town I grew up in, the friends that I went from kindergarten through high school with, my partner, my family, my brother, it's so refreshing to realize that outside of our metropolitan areas, there is a heart and a soul in friendship that I personally have never found until finding Jason and coming back home to my family and friends. I know that there that sounds like there's a little bit of a drawing a wedge between city and country, you know, but I'm not placing a judgment on it. It's just that I think that when we slow down and begin to value life a little more than what I believe the fast pace of New York, you know, and my experiences there, it's very easy to get caught up, you know.
Do you ever know that you're my hero? You're everything I would like to be.
Well, I love that you have so many people, you know, in your circle that support you. A lot of people, you know, I come from a very small town in the mountains of Virginia. And so for me, it's when I go to cities and when I am exposed to art, that's when I feel understood and supported. So I know a lot of people find that sense of unity and support through theater. And I've been listening to Broadway at the Keys. I absolutely love it. What does musical theater mean to you?
Musical theater is important to me. How acting is important to me in general. It's funny because I have this weird relationship with acting versus my relationship with being a singer-songwriter. My singer-songwriter experiences, my history, everything that I've gone through, the staggering amount of rejection, the staggering amount of self-will it's taken to build it on my own. And then there's acting that was just sort of there for me. It happened without me really clenching my fist and swearing to the sky that it must be. It was just sort of happening. And I love expressing myself through different characters. It's really therapeutic for me. And even recently loving expressing myself through villains as, well, currently as the anti-equality preacher in a movie called A Very Sordid Wedding, which is Del Shore's sequel to Sordid Lives, where I get to speak the words of all the preachers I heard growing up, the men that taught me how to hate myself. And I get to go in and believe those words. I get to take that crazy psychological journey back to my 6 years of conversion therapy to see if I can convince myself that I believe that stuff again. That was crazy. You know, but I mean, I think whether it's musical theater or film, you know, stage or film, either one, I love acting, and it's that thing that I will always just do, and I won't even care if it's on this huge platform or a small indie film, as long as I get to do great characters, as long as I get to do it. And that, I have so much joy in that medium.
Well, I know that from my perspective, you know, music and the arts have been a part of that progress that you were just talking about, you know, especially groundbreaking shows like Rent. And I know that you played Roger in a national tour. Why do you think Rent still means so much to people after all these years?
Oh, gosh, I'm looking at chills on my arm right now just thinking about how moving that story is. I just, even to this day, you know, wow, what an experience as some kid just deciding to move to L.A. and come out and be like, hey, world, this is me. It was such a brief experience for me because it was only a 3-month experience. I had just moved to Los Angeles, and I was only been there like a week or so, staying on the futon of this girlfriend of mine, Stephanie Davis, and there was this thing called Backstage West and her floor. She had gone to work for the day. And I thought, I really want to soak up this city, kind of see what people experience when they move here. So I've noticed this Backstage West was obviously a collection of castings. I knew what a cattle call was. I'd never heard of this thing called Rent. But I decided, you know what? I'm going to see what people do here. I just want to like have a random, bold sort of, I'm going to go to a cattle call. No headshot, no resume. I'd never even thought about acting. I got in there and I sang, I Can't Make You Love Me. And they said, great, can you work on these scenes and come back? And I'm like, okay, so what I know from church music is that if I believe it when I sing it, everybody else is going to believe it too. So I'm going to believe these scenes. I'm just going to convince myself that I feel everything on this page. Well, I walked, which actually, you know, you can put it in more highbrow terminology, but isn't that true? How, you know, isn't that the crux of every great performance? If you can be that honest with yourself, you know, if you can be that honest in any scene that you're doing. 5 callbacks later, I was cast in the role of Roger. Knew nothing. Was horrible. Horrible. lasted 3 months. But for me, to your question, it was the thing that introduced me to people that were like me. Hmm. It opened a whole new world for me. And I think that it still does that from the stage today. I mean, I think about those kids who leave their small town at 18, you know, 19, and they go to New York City, they're seeing something like that for the first time. Maybe it's less and less these days with so much media now embracing our community, but I have to think that there's still some young person out there looking at this cast thinking, wow, this is where I belong.
One song, glory. One song before echo glory, one song to leave behind. Find one song, one last refrain, glory.
You've talked about so much of the difficulty that you've had in life. So, you know, to go from that to winning a Tony for the role of Jerry Lee Lewis in Million Dollar Quartet, what was that like?
What? No, I just feel like that was random. That I didn't see coming. It's been fine, but I think one of the greatest lessons, and I hear this from a couple of friends of mine that are Academy Award winning actors, and we've shared the same sentiment that at the end of the day, in this fast-paced world of 140 characters or less, with news being old 12 hours later, honestly, it's you realize it's wonderful, you know, to be recognized by your community for a piece of work that you did. And that meant the world to me, to be accepted into the musical theater community when I had started with, in my fumbling way with a 3-month contract with rent and then went into film and didn't think then for a while that I would get back to stage. So to have that piece bring me to New York and to win the approval of that community means a lot to me. I mean, these are the most talented actors in the country. And it was intimidating because, I mean, you know, these show up and these guys have master's degrees in theater and you're thinking, well, I'm just an old country bumpkin who is, you know, been learning my skill trial by fire. Now I play that down. Truthfully, I've had an incredible teacher in Los Angeles with people like Amy Adams in my class. So her name's Warner Laughlin. She's really, really wonderful. But at the end of the day, you realize that, I mean, with anything, I mean, you can't, you're only as good as your next thing. You know, I don't think you can take those things too seriously because while it's a blessing and I honor what that is, it's old news at this point, isn't it? I mean, what am I going to be creating? How am I going to redefine myself? I mean, especially when I feel like we continue to evolve year by year. I don't even feel like I'm the same person as I was 7 years ago. I'm really excited about how I'm going to be able to express myself this year and next year.
Well, that's a perfect segue into my last question. So, you know, I know you're on the Broadway at the Keys tour now. So what is coming up for the new Evolved Levi in the next year?
I just received the masters back for my new album that comes out of original music. I pick up where my debut album left off, One of the Ones. It's very inspired by that because, as you've pointed out, I Should Go and the songs that are on that album are still my fans' favorites. And so I wanted to look at I wanted to look deeply into my divorce and begin to address those hard issues very much in the vulnerability that One of the Ones did. So I'm really excited for my fans to hear it because they'll get everything that they related to with my debut album. But I think they're going to hear 10 years a better writer, the best songs I've ever written. I'm just really excited about sharing the new original material and where my heart is now. A lot of the album that's coming is me writing about learning how to love post-addiction. I've been sober for 8 years.
Oh, congrats.
And it's been a messy thing looking back at relationships that I tried to be honest in as an addict. I tried to be present for and then growing into something that is so valuable like I have right now. And realizing that when we started it even, I certainly felt over my head. How could I have scored such an incredible human being? And so these songs sort of chronicle my journey from messy love as an addict who had not discovered the value of self-love to someone who's learning how to love in a healthy relationship.
Well, I can't wait to hear it. I will be sober 2 years in 2 weeks. So hopefully I'm starting my own version of that journey.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's gonna be alright. It's gonna be alright.
Welcome back to the Positive Psychology of Pop Music, where this week, we're spotlighting the incredibly talented Levi Kreis. You just heard a track from his very first album, Gonna Be Alright, and if Levi's upcoming music is even half as soulful and moving as that song, which he promises it is, we are in for an absolutely awesome album. You can keep your eyes peeled for news about Levi's upcoming album, his latest film, A Very Sordid Wedding, and all of his other great projects by heading to levikreis.com. That's LevikreisCom. And for more music and interviews with other great artists like Levi, don't forget to check out thepositivepsychologyofpopmusic.com. We've got time for one more track from Levi, and while it is appropriately titled for the end of the show, it's really about overcoming your fears to pursue the people and the goals you want in your life, and vowing to hold on to them no matter what. It's a song and a message that inspires me greatly, and I hope it will do the same for each of you. Thanks again to Levi Kreis for taking the time to chat with me, and thanks to each of you for listening. For the Positive Psychology of Pop Music, I'm Wesley Ryan, and with the word goodbye, this is Levi Kreis.
I'd rather be a loser, I'd rather not try, so I'm doing everything I know to do, to never have to say the word.